Our topic for this next tape is one that I believe is going to interest nearly everybody who listens to it. And the subject is the meaning of love. What does it mean to fall in love? What does it mean to have this kind of relationship with another person that binds you together in a love relationship for the rest of your life? How do you know when you're in love? And can you be fooled? Can you think you have it when you don't? What are the characteristics of it? And what is necessary to keep it alive? Now, this is a subject that there's a great deal of confusion about. And I think that confusion causes many, many people to get involved in a marriage relationship that doesn't last very long. And it may even contribute to the divorce rate that's taking place in our country at this time. A confusion about what love really is, what it does, what it means emotionally, and how to make sense out of it all. So that's our subject for this tape, and it's relevant to all of us because most people in our society apparently want to get married. You know, that's the objective. Some people don't feel that way, but most people do. A man told me the other day that he thought girls were like elephants. He said they're interesting to look at, but he wouldn't want to own one. So he didn't particularly want to get married, but most people do. When they come into their teenage years, they start thinking about that possibility. Girls think more about marriage than boys do during that time, but a little later on, the boys get the idea too, and they start searching for that one person that's going to mean everything in the world to them for the rest of their lives. Now, when they finally find that one person, they go into an ecstasy that's very hard to describe if you've never been there, and most of you will not have. It is a tremendous feeling. What an excitement. They can hardly take their eyes off each other. They want to be together all the time. They dream about each other. They talk about each other. They want to take walks in the park and walks in the rain and sit by the fireside. Every thought is in reference to the other person. They are completely and totally wrapped up in that one person that they have, quote, fallen in love with, unquote. And they enjoy each other's company so much, and they seem to have so much in common, that they decide to make a full-time project out of it. So they decide to get married, and they set the date, and they get the preacher, and they have the wedding, and then there's the cake, and the friends come, and everybody's happy and smiling, and they say the wedding vows. And they run out of the church, and there's rice thrown over them, and aren't they a sweet couple? And they jump into a car, and they drive off for the honeymoon. And almost from that moment, something changes in their relationship. That tremendous excitement with each other, and that tremendous enthusiasm, and that, quote, love, unquote, begins to fade a little bit. And it takes on a different look. Instead of something you hope you can get and you can't wait until and you dream about the possibility of, when you finally get it and you're finally married, you begin to wonder whether or not this is really what you wanted. And now, you see, it begins to take on the look of something you're stuck with instead of something you were out to try to capture or get. And then they haven't been home from the honeymoon but about 3 or 4 days when the first fight occurs. And it's usually over something minor. You know, it's not a big thing, but it's enough to get them fighting to each other. And then there's tears, and there's meanness, and hard words, and hostility, and pots and pans flying through the air, and trips home to see Mama. And from there to the bitter end, which may not take very long, you have two extremely unhappy people. And what's worse, too often there are three unhappy people by that time. And that new fellow is a screaming, toothless little guy who has to have his diapers changed about every 15 minutes. Now, obviously, this description that I've just given you is not true of all marriages, but it happens all too often. It's estimated that at least 50%, and probably more, of all marriages in America end in divorce. And at least 50% of all teenage marriages end in divorce within the first 5 years, as I mentioned to you before. Now, that's a tragically high percentage. That means that at least half of these people who were tremendously in love and tremendously excited with each other, wind up disillusioned, bitter, unhappy, and broken as a result. You see, the divorce rate in America is higher than any other civilized nation in the world. And we have to ask ourselves why. What's happening? What's taking place? Now, there are many influences, many reasons for it, but we have to explain what happened to that feeling that was there before. What happened to that tremendous excitement and enthusiasm, that being totally wrapped up in the other person and enamored with the other person, which just a few months later turned into hatred and hostility and anger and conflict between the two of them? How did it happen? How did it happen that a person thought they had a lifetime love and wound up with a broken home and perhaps broken children as a result? And I want to emphasize that fact again of the broken children. Perhaps some of you are the products of a broken home. Maybe your mother and father got a divorce. I'm sure some listening to this tape have been there. And you know something about the pain involved. You know something about the hurt. You've heard the arguing. You've heard the meanness that I've talked about. You've heard the anger between your mother and father. And maybe that's left its scars on your life. I heard the comedian Jonathan Winters talking seriously the other day. As you know, Jonathan Winters is always laughing and joking, and he very seldom does get serious. But I heard him on television talking about his own childhood. And he said that when he was 7 years old, his mother and father got a divorce. And the other kids, boys particularly, would laugh at him and say that he didn't have a daddy like they did. And he said he would fight them and he'd hit them and he'd threaten them and shake his fist at them. But when they were gone, he would go out behind a tree someplace and cry. And he said that all of his humor as an adult is really kind of an outgrowth of sorrow. It's his way of dealing with sorrow in his own life because it was so hard and so painful when his family split up. This is something that I want to help you avoid in your own marriage because it's not necessary. I think part of the problem occurs because of a lack of understanding about this word love, a failure to understand the meaning of love. What is it? How can you recognize it when it's there? And how can you avoid being fooled by a feeling that most of those people who wind up in a divorce court had? This is what you have to understand. The people who wind up hating each other also had that feeling. It's not just for those who remained together. The feeling was there in nearly all of them, but it blew up for some of them. How can you avoid being one of those people and have one of the really meaningful, God-given loves and relationships that were intended from the beginning? I think the best place to begin to get an understanding about the meaning of love is with a little test that I created, which I call Beliefs About Love. And this was never intended to be a highly scientific sort of instrument, but it's just a little inventory or questionnaire where I ask you 10 questions and you indicate yes or no on a piece of paper. So get a pencil and a piece of paper, and if you're in a group, I would suggest that you turn off the tape after each question that I ask and discuss it among yourselves. Or if you're just with your parent, the two of you talk about it. And then write down your answer, whether you think it's yes or no to each one of these 10 items. And I think you'll find this useful in beginning to understand something about love. Question number one. I believe love at first sight occurs between some people. In other words, do you believe it's possible to just be walking along a sidewalk or perhaps at church or in a crowded room someplace and you see that person for the first time? You don't know them, you know nothing about them, you don't know their name, you don't know anything about them, but you look at them and you say, it's love. Yes or no, does that ever occur? Number two, I believe it's very easy to tell real love from puppy love, or infatuation. Now, by puppy love, I mean a kind of a temporary excitement that goes away. It's easy to tell the difference between those two, yes or no. Number three, I believe people who sincerely love each other will not fight and argue. Is that a characteristic of real love? When you're really in love and it's a genuine thing that goes very deep within you, can you live together without fighting and without arguing with each other? Number four, I believe God selects one particular person for each of us to marry, and He will guide us together. If you're a Christian young man or young lady, do you believe that God has selected that one person for you, and He's working events together so as to bring you together, and then when you're together, He will spark something between you so that you will know that that's what He wants? Yes or no, does God do that? Number five, I believe if a man and a woman genuinely love each other, then hardships and troubles and money problems and illness and other difficulties will have very little effect on their relationship. In other words, if love is genuine, does it mean that your love is more steady than the events that take place around you? Do circumstances affect a love relationship, or is it apart from that? I hope you understand the question there. What I'm really saying is that if you genuinely love each other, can you have constant sickness and constant problems, and does your love automatically rise above that and remain stable? Or is your love affected by those things? If the hardships and troubles have little relationship on your love, then say yes. If you think your love is affected by those things, then say no. Number six, I believe it is better to marry the wrong person than to remain single and lonely throughout life. Which would you rather do? Get into a bad marriage and be miserable, or stay single and be lonely? If you think it's better to marry the wrong person, say yes. If not, say no. Number seven, I believe it is not harmful or sinful to have sexual intercourse before marriage if the couple has a meaningful relationship. What I'm asking here is, do you believe that if you really love somebody, it's all right to have sexual intercourse with them, as I described on the previous tape? If you believe that it's not harmful or sinful to do that, say yes. Number eight, I believe if a couple is genuinely in love, then their love is permanent. It will last a lifetime. Real love is permanent, yes or no? Number nine, I believe short courtships are best, of 6 months or less. In other words, is it best to date for a long time, maybe a year or 2 years, to get acquainted? Or is it better to just go together for a short time, and then when you have that exciting feeling, to go ahead and get married? And number 10, I believe teenagers are more capable of real, genuine love than our older people. Yes or no? Okay, let's go back now and look at each one of these 10 items. And let me tell you what I believe the answers are, and then you compare them with the answers that you've given. And let's discuss it a little bit. Number one, I believe love at first sight occurs between some people. Absolutely not. The answer has to be no. Because you cannot possibly love something that you don't even know. You can't love somebody whose name you're not even acquainted with. And I think to understand this issue, and it's an important one, we have to know the difference between the feeling of love and the genuine thing itself. Because this is the major problem that I was talking about a few minutes ago, and it's the reason that I put this item first on the list. Maybe I can illustrate it with an example. When I was in college, a number of years ago, my parents traveled all the time. So I didn't have a home to go to when vacation time came around, and I had to stay in the dormitory at school all year round. Everybody else would leave in the summer and go to their homes to work or whatever they do in the summer, and I had to stay there in the dormitory throughout those 3 months out of the summer, out of each year. And I worked, and I would come home from work to the dorm, and there was nobody there, maybe one or two other bored people in the dorm. And it was very quiet, very lonely, and I usually spent a very dull summer. Fantastic boredom, no one there. And I just couldn't wait until the fall when everybody would return to school again. They'd all come in with their suitcases and all the excitement and rush and hubbub and everything, and I couldn't wait till they returned. And particularly, I couldn't wait till the new crop of girls came back in the fall, because it'd been a pretty lonely summer from that point of view, too. So every September, I was really in the mood for love, and I would fall hopelessly in love with someone about September the 12th of every year. I could just count on it. I knew it was going to happen. I couldn't eat, and I couldn't sleep, and I couldn't study. In fact, studying was one of the first things to go in the fall of each year. And there was a kind of an emotional explosion at the start of each school year because of this exciting romance that I would get into each year. Now, that feeling, that emotional explosion that I just mentioned, is one of the most tremendous things in human experience. It is something else. You will someday know what I'm talking about. It's a fantastic emotional ride, and it takes in your whole life. It's 24 hours a day. It interferes with everything when you are up there on that emotional peak after you have, quote, fallen in love, unquote, with somebody. That feeling is often mistaken for love, but believe me, folks, they're not one and the same thing. They're two different things. That feeling is not love. Now, let's analyze that feeling for just a minute. It's a feeling of romantic excitement. You know, there's a girl involved, or if you're a girl, there's a boy involved. It's a feeling of flattery at being loved in return. You know, it does something for you. It makes you feel good that the other person likes you, too. And it's a feeling of pleasure that comes from companionship and security and happiness and all those things. Many people call that love, but is it really? If you think about it for a moment, that feeling has two main characteristics, two things that describe it. First of all, it's highly self-centered. The focus is on me. It's not on the other person at all. You see, what's happening to me is wonderful. This is fantastic. I never felt this way before. This is the greatest thing that ever happened to me. You see, the person has not fallen in love with another person at all. He's fallen in love with love. And there's a big difference. You see, it's an exciting thing he is experiencing. The other person is just something to be won. The other person is a prize to capture. But you're not dedicated to that other person's future, that other person's feelings, that other person's needs. It's not focused on the other person. It's focused right on yourself. It's extremely selfish. It's a personal thing that you're involved in, and the other person just kind of happens to be the stimulus for it all. Secondly, and here's the tragedy, if you hear nothing else that I say on this entire tape, please hear this. 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, teenagers, hear me. That feeling of romantic excitement at the start of a relationship with another person is never permanent. It never lasts very long. It can't, because emotions don't operate that way. They go from high to low to high to low, and you cannot remain up on that peak for very long. It's a physiological, emotional impossibility to remain excited for very long. That feeling will go away, I promise you. You see, and when I say love at first sight never occurs, I didn't say that that feeling didn't occur at first sight. It certainly can. You can have that exciting, romantic feeling. Someone appeals to you. They look good to you. They seem to be the kind of person you've been looking for. They are clean. They are neat. They are attractive to you. They talk nice. You like the way they walk. You like their family. And you fall, quote, in love, unquote, with the thing they stand for. But you really don't know them. You don't know that person when they get up in the morning. You don't know that person when they're down, when they're going through hard times. You don't know their habits. You don't know all of these things about them. You haven't fallen in love with the person. You have fallen in love with the feeling of love. And that feeling never lasts for very long. You can count on it. It's going to go. Now, if you go plunging in to a quick marriage and tie the knot before the feeling has a chance to swing back and forth, then you get a great shock shortly after you're married when the feeling goes away and all of a sudden you wonder whether or not you were really in love in the first place at all. I hope I'm not taking you too fast. I hope you will listen to this over and over and over again. It is extremely important for you to know that that feeling is not love. The feeling then sometimes gives way to love. In other words, you can have that feeling at first sight, and then as you get acquainted with a person and you become dedicated to the other person, and you gradually come to an acquaintance with the other person, it can go into love, but the feeling itself is not love, and you can't count on it staying there. It's just not very permanent, and it's kind of dangerous. Why do I make such a big deal out of this? The reason is because so many teenagers don't know what I just said, and I can prove it by their songs. If you just listen to the words of the songs that teenagers sing, you can see the confusion at this point, because they think that the feeling itself is the love. Like the song that says, "Before the dance was through, I knew I was in love with you." Now, come on, sports fans, that's not love. You see, during the course of the dance, the fellow had the feeling of love. And then he interpreted that as being a permanent lifetime thing. That feeling came during the course of the dance. It may leave during the course of the next one. And it's not love. Another one, that song that was out a while ago that says, "I didn't know just what to do, so I whispered, I love you." Now that one really gets me, friends. Because the idea of making a lifetime commitment on the basis of confusion just seems kind of silly to me. Yet that's what it is, you see. There was an awkward moment between the boy and the girl, and he wasn't sure exactly what to say, so he said, "I love you." And she gets all shook up and thinks, fantastic, this guy's falling in love with me, and she falls in love back, and they're on their way to disaster, and I can promise you that. You see, many of the teenage songs move love closer and closer to the beginning of an acquaintance. Maybe you remember the rock group called The Doors of a while back. They had a song that really made this mistake. The name of it was, "Hello, I love you, won't you tell me your name?" No way, no way, that is love, folks. You cannot possibly love somebody when you don't even know their name. The Partridge Family has a record out now that says, quote, "I woke up in love this day, went to sleep with you on my mind." Now there it is in a nutshell. There's the mistake. You see, I am in love this morning. Why? Because I went to sleep with you on my mind. You see, love is nothing more than a frame of mind. It came overnight. And easy come, easy go. That which comes overnight can leave overnight. And that is not love, and that can fool you, because the feeling is unlike anything you've ever experienced. If you just go on the basis of the feeling, then you can convince yourself that you are in love and it's the most fantastic thing that ever happened, and that it came at first sight, and that all will be well, that you can take anything, any hardship, any difficulty in life because of this fantastic feeling. What happens then when that feeling begins to slip through your fingers and it isn't there anymore, and I thought I had something going, but what happened? I made a big mistake, and you grab your wrist and feel your pulse, and you wonder, what in the world have you done? And you have tied a knot in your life, tied yourself to another person for a lifetime kind of thing when you can hardly bear the sight of each other. It's a danger that can occur to any of you, and I encourage you to avoid it. All right, let's take the second item that I read. Number two, I believe it is easy to distinguish real love from puppy love or infatuation. I hope that you marked the answer to that one no or false, because it is definitely negative. And that's another very important item, because each one of us who feels that we're in love and who is deciding whether or not to get married has to ask himself that question. Is this love real, or is it just something I've gotten into? Is this feeling going to last, or is it going to blow up and go away? And we have to be able to tell the difference. How do you tell the difference? How can you tell if you are genuinely in love or if you have fooled yourself in the way that I've been describing? As far as I'm concerned, there's only one way to know the difference between real love and puppy love. One way. And that's to give yourself time to know your own feelings. If you don't rush into anything, if you don't run out and get married before you've had a chance to find out what your feelings are going to do, you will gradually come to an understanding of what you want and what's best for the other person as well. If you get married in the first month or the first 2 months or the first 6 months, you don't know what your feelings are going to do. See, it's almost impossible to tell whether that excitement that you felt is just a temporary thing or whether it is going to grow into a long-term, deep-seated love for the other person. And I would strongly urge you not to do anything rash until you've had a chance to find out what your own feelings and the feelings of the other person are going to do. You may be committed to him, but there's no guarantee that his love for you is going to last either. So time is the only answer. And I would suggest that you postpone any kind of action until your feelings have had a chance to move back and forth and you know what your own emotions are going to do. Number three. I believe people who sincerely love each other will not fight and argue. Now, the answer to this one may come as a surprise to many of you. In fact, if you're typical, you're going to be missing a lot of these items as we go down the row. You'll probably miss some more before we're through. The answer to this one, again, is no. People who love each other still have differences of opinion. They still disagree. They still get irritated. They get fatigued. They come home from work tired. The children have been on the mother's nerves, and she's exhausted. And the father comes home from driving the freeway, and he's had a bad day at the office, and he pulls into the driveway and comes into the house, and the washing machine is broken, and there's been water all over the floor, and everything seems to go wrong. There's a big stack of bills there that they're having trouble paying. Their nerves are on edge, and it's very easy for people who really love each other to find themselves arguing and fighting. Besides that, there are differences of opinion about important subjects, how to spend their money and where to go to church, and many, many things come up where you have two separate individuals, two different people, living together and perhaps getting on each other's nerves, but still loving each other very deeply. So arguing and disagreeing and even what you would call fighting occasionally can definitely occur among people who love each other. In fact, I have met very few people and have seen very few marriages which are so mature and so stable and things were going so well that the people didn't have this kind of disagreement. So you can expect it in your own marriage. Even though you are deeply in love and even though every thought is of the other person and his feelings and his needs, the chances are great that you're going to get into disagreements, and that first year of your marriage will probably be a time of trying to get adjusted to each other and deciding who's going to make the decisions and how your marriage is going to run and how you're going to spend your money and what you're going to do with your vacations and All those kinds of issues will likely cause some conflict between you. It does not mean that your marriage is over. It does not mean you've made a mistake. It means that you've got to go to work on it then and work out your differences. That's the difference between a good marriage and a bad one. A good marriage does not mean they don't have differences, but they work on them and they are committed to trying to solve them because they love the other person. The bad marriage is one where I'm in it because I love me, not the other person. I married you because you would be good for me. I married you because you'll help me by taking care of my home. Or you're going to be a doctor and I marry you because you're going to make a good living and that'll be good for me. You see, when you get into it for selfish reasons, when you get into marriage because it's best for you, and you're not thinking about the other person, then you go straight into a stone wall when you draw the conclusion that it's no longer to your advantage to be married. That's where you get into problems, you see. So in a good marriage, people do fight and argue, but they work on it and try to resolve or get rid of the differences between them. Number four, I believe God selects one particular person for each of us to marry, and He will guide us together. Friends, if you believe that, you're in trouble, because that will lead you to think that the first person you have the feeling of love for is the person God has selected, and therefore it isn't necessary to be cautious in who you marry. I think it's extremely important that you choose this mate, this person that you're going to marry, very, very carefully. And God does not perform a routine marital service of going out and selecting that person for you. You can love God and be a good Christian and still marry the wrong person. And I could show you a lot of people who would prove that to you because they've done it. Now, I didn't say that if you get on your knees before God and you ask for His wisdom and His guidance and His love in finding that right person for you, that He won't answer that prayer, because I know that He will, and I've seen it done. But it's not something that's just automatic because you're a Christian. It's not something that God does for all the people who are Christians. He doesn't sit in heaven with a list of names over here of candidates, people that want to get married, and here's another list over here of people of the opposite sex, and He says, I'll take Jack, and let's see, I'll get him with Mary, and we'll pull these two together. It does not work that way. It's like any other answered prayer. It's like healing. God can heal you of a disease, but just because you're a Christian doesn't mean that you're not going to have any diseases. It's the same kind of thing. But also, I encourage you to pray about who you are going to marry, because God will answer that kind of prayer. And I've seen that in my own life and in my own marriage. My wife was 7 years old when she began to think about who she was going to marry. And more than anything else, she wanted to have a happy home. And more than that, she wanted a Christian husband. And as a little girl, a little seven-year-old girl who was not very important in life. You know, she didn't have a lot of money, and she wasn't somebody that the whole world was looking to for great things. But God saw her, and He saw her go into her bedroom and shut the door, and He saw her when she got on her knees and began to pray to Him. And in her childlike way, she asked Him to bless her future home, to give her a husband that loved her, and more importantly, to give her a husband that loved God. And God answered that prayer, and we have a tremendous marriage together, and I love her. I love her deeply. But it's not a feeling that I fell into. You know, the idea of, quote, falling in love is kind of strange. You don't fall in love, you grow into love. It's not something like a big pit, and you're walking along, and you stumble, and boom, you find yourself at the bottom of this pit, and you look up, and you say, by George, I'm in love. I fell into it. You don't fall in love like that. You gradually get acquainted with a person, and you grow into love. I have grown into an appreciation for my wife. I care for her feelings. I care for her needs.
I hurt when she hurts. I'm happy when she's happy. Her future is important to me. Her past. Everything that she feels, I feel because I'm dedicated to her. And I'll tell you something else about the feeling. I don't always have this intense, romantic, tremendously exciting feeling of love for her every second of the day. I get tired too, so does she. But even when the feeling is not there, the love is still there because it's a commitment of my will. I have made up my mind to take care of her and to be dedicated to her. And the feeling comes and goes when we have time to be together, when we're on vacation, when exciting things happen, when we're doing romantic things together, the feeling comes back and it lasts for days. When I get busy, when my mind is on other things, when there's been sickness in the family and hardship, the feeling is not there. But the love is the same. The love is different from the feeling. The love is based on the will. The feeling comes and goes. The love is like the engine of a train. That's the will. You see, I will love my wife. The feeling is the caboose down on the end of the train. It's being pulled along by the commitment of the will. And that kind of deep feeling is there. And in our case, going back to the question, it's a gift from God because my wife and I also prayed about it during my later years. But as a very small child, she began to pray about this person that she would marry. I strongly suggest that you do the same. Begin to pray that you would not make a mistake. Begin to pray that you would know your own feelings, that God would lead you together and keep you from getting into a situation that you would later regret and that would not be His best for you. This is something that you can do and something that God will do for you, and I encourage you to do so. But don't expect it automatically because you're a Christian, for God does not perform that miracle. I wish He did, but He just doesn't, and I can prove that by the lives of certain individuals. Number five, I believe if a man and a woman genuinely love each other, then hardships and troubles will have little or no effect on their relationship. Do you understand the question? I feel I ought to repeat it again and explain it. That if your love is real, does that mean that nothing can shake it? And again, the answer is no. Love is like life. It's fragile. You can break it. You can crush it. You can ruin it. And sometimes hard times and difficulties can take a real love and ruin it and twist it and bend it and destroy it. I'm on the staff of a children's hospital, and I see some very tragic things that occur. I see little children who are brought in who are broken and bruised. I see children who have diseases that you wouldn't believe. They would make you sick just to see the children in the condition that they're in. They're in the process of dying. Or perhaps their brain doesn't work properly. Or maybe from birth they've been born with very strange kinds of bodies. And these problems, when they occur, make their parents feel guilty, even though it isn't their parents' fault. And sometimes this guilt of having a child that's so broken and so and is hurt so badly can take a real love between a mother and a father and destroy it. You see, the guilt can get in and work on them inside and rot them emotionally. So hardship does affect the love, and it is important to know that you have to work to keep that love alive. You have to protect it, just like life. You just can't treat it anyway. You do have to preserve it and take care of it and maintain it. Question number six. I believe it's better to marry the wrong person than to remain single and lonely throughout life. No. Again, the answer is no. I think it's better to still be looking than to be involved in a bad marriage. Even though to be single may mean to be lonely, and it often does. And the ideal thing is for a man and a woman to be married and living together and raising a family and enjoying all of the benefits of each other's company.
That's a tremendous thing when it happens, and when it happens right. It's still better to be single than to get into the kind of scrapping and clawing and fighting in the kind of marriage where there's hostility and conflict between you, the kind that I've been talking about. Choose that mate very carefully, folks. Yet many young people are so anxious to get married that they'll take the first freight train that comes down the track, and it is often a one-way ticket to disaster. Item number 7. I believe it is not harmful or sinful to have sexual intercourse before marriage if the couple has a meaningful relationship. I certainly hope that you know by now that the answer to that question is emphatically no. That statement is false and wrong, despite the fact that in the last 8 or 10 years in our society, it's become very popular to tell young people that the old rules didn't apply and everything has changed and now there's a new morality and that there's nothing wrong with having sexual relations, with exploring the body of a person of the opposite sex, as I've described on the previous tape, provided they're in love, quote unquote. Provided that they have a meaningful relationship, provided that they seem to love each other. And this is the most dangerous of all of the 10 mistaken ideas about love, because it has many, many terrible consequences. And certainly God's view of that issue is abundantly clear. If you are a Christian, or if you believe the Bible has any truth and validity whatsoever, then you have to recognize what it says about this issue. On the previous tape, I told you what God's view of this was. I think the best way to handle it at this point is to read you directly from God's Word. Let me read you from Colossians 3, verses 5 to 10, from the Living Bible. And once again, this is not my opinion. I'm not the one that's making this up. If you don't agree with what you're hearing, then you have to argue with the Word of God, because that's where it's taken. Beginning with verse 5. Away then with sinful earthly things. Deaden the evil desires lurking within you. Have nothing to do with sexual sin. Sexual sin is what I was just talking about. Impurity, lust, and shameful desires. Don't even worship the good things of life, for that is idolatry. God's terrible anger is upon those who do such things. You used to do them when your life was still part of this world. But now is the time to cast off and throw away all those rotten garments of anger, hatred, cursing, and dirty language. Don't tell lies to each other. It was your old life and all its wickedness that did that sort of thing. Now it is dead and gone. You are living a brand new kind of life that is continually learning more and more of what is right and trying constantly to be more like Christ, who created this new life within you. There's the message, you see. It tells us not to get involved with sinful earthly things and to deaden the evil desires lurking within us, to have nothing to do with sexual sin. This again comes from the Word of God, and it says His terrible anger is upon those who do those things. Another scripture relating to this is 2 Timothy 2:22, where He says, "Run from anything that gives you the evil thoughts that young men often have, but stay close to anything that makes you want to do right. Have faith and love and enjoy the companionship of those who love the Lord and have pure hearts." When you find yourself in the company of people who are not doing things that are right, who don't believe what's right, they have an influence on you. And as this scripture says, run from that kind of relationship that gives you these evil thoughts and that can cause you to do wrong. Because we do influence each other, as I was discussing on the tape on conformity. And finally, this scripture in Hebrews 13, verse 4, relates to marriage and about how God intended our bodies to be for one other person that we marry, and nobody else. It says, "Honor your marriage and its vows, See, we vow to be loyal to one person only. Honor that marriage vow. Honor it and be pure, for God will surely punish all those who are immoral or commit adultery. This message is throughout the Bible. It is very obviously what God wants for us and wants for our lives. And no matter what the world tells you, don't you believe it. It is harmful and it is sinful to have sexual intercourse before marriage. It doesn't matter if you have a meaningful relationship at all. God didn't say that, and certainly Jesus did not say it when he was here. That's the 20th century saying it to you. That's today. And the people out there that are saying that either don't know what the Bible says, or they don't care, or they don't believe it, or all three, perhaps. The next item, item number 8, says, I believe if a couple is genuinely in love, that condition is permanent, lasting a lifetime. I really already answered that. I've told you that the answer to that is no, because the love has to be maintained. This is probably the most important of the 10 items for married people. Those parents who are there who are listening should be aware that your love, even if it's genuine, can die if you don't work to keep it alive. You have to make an investment in your relationship. You have to take time to be together, take time to talk to each other, take time to pray together. And don't allow anything to come between that relationship, because there's nothing permanent about love. It has to be maintained, supported, fed, taken care of, just like a little infant that's growing up in your home. Item number 9 I've also dealt with. I believe short courtships, 6 months or less, are best. And I think I gave you that answer in reference to the second item, in that you have to give yourself time to know your own feelings and your own emotions, and let them run back and forth until they stabilize and you learn what you really want and what's best for you and the other person. Short courtships are very dangerous because they occur, major decisions occur before you've had a chance to get acquainted with yourself or the other person. And the last item on the test, item number 10, I believe teenagers are more capable of genuine love than our older people. The answer to this is no also, because real love requires maturity. You see, it requires the ability to give of yourself. It's not grabbing. It's not seeing how much I can get. It's not taking care of myself. Real love focuses on the other person's needs and feelings, and being able to give of yourself without expecting to get in return. Now, that takes a great deal of maturity. And it's unusual to find that kind of unselfishness when you're going through all of the things that I've been describing on all of these tapes that come during adolescence. This is why the teenage years are risky for marriage. And if you can avoid it, and if they're, unless it seems very necessary for you to get married, I strongly suggest that you postpone your marriage until you're in your 20s. And by all means, don't make the biggest mistake of all, which is to use marriage as a way of getting away from your parents and a way of getting away from your home. See, many young people who are 17 or 18 years old and are miserable at home, they're not getting along with their parents, they're fighting with their brothers and sisters, they're unhappy with their lives, and along comes a chance to set up housekeeping someplace and get married to somebody who's seems to be available to you, and you seem to have some kind of feeling for them. That is jumping from the frying pan into the fire, and that's a disastrous mistake. Don't use marriage as a way of getting away from what's already a bad thing, because you'll be into a worse one. It's just highly likely that you won't improve your situation. You'll make it worse, but you also are fouling up the rest of your lives when you get into that kind of situation. Okay, you've heard the answers to the 10 items on the test. Every single one of them is no. The reason they're all no is because those 10 items that I read represent the 10 most common mistaken ideas about love. These are the 10 things that I hear most often in counseling and in working with young people, which show me that the people do not really understand what the real meaning of love is. If I had to put it in one sentence, I would say that real love is caring for that other person almost as much as you do for yourself. Because this is again what the Bible said, that it is becoming one flesh with the other person. You actually become one person. The two people melt into one. So that it's not something you are doing for me, and I marry you because you will do something good for me. It's because I love you as much as my own flesh, and by marrying you, we become one. That is the real meaning of love that God intended. And if you have that kind of appreciation for another person, you're on the way to a happy home. I hope you've enjoyed some of these comments and discussions. There's a lot of room for talk among yourselves or around each one of these, and I hope that you'll use this tape in that way. And I hope, too, that the person that you marry just tends to be a happy person. You know, some people just happen to have happy hormones, and just everything is brighter, and other people are extremely temperamental. The definition of that term is 90% temper and 10% mental. And lots of luck if you happen to marry one of those kind of people. Maybe you're one of those people yourselves. It's just easier to live with some people than with others. But if the love is genuine and real, then it becomes possible to make something very meaningful out of this most important aspect of your life.